Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The information depicted in this podcast is purely for informational purposes only. Please consult your healthcare professional before making any changes to your lifestyle or routine.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Boost Your Biology podcast. My name is Lucas, and I'm the founder of Ergogenic Health. Together in this podcast series, we will go underground to explore cutting-edge health and human performance insights that you simply cannot search on Google to help you upgrade your existence. So without any further ado, let's jump into today's episode. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Boost Your Biology podcast. I'm your host, Lucas, and today I have a special guest joining me in, also from Melbourne. His name is Kyle Traynor. And I met Kyle about a few months back, one of my close friends who's also a very influential health figure introduced me to Kyle, and yeah, we sort of hit it off, and I was really curious by, his background and what he had to offer. So I thought I'd bring him onto today's show just to talk all things like mindset, a little bit about business development, and a little bit on psychology as well. So Kyle, thanks for joining me in today. I'm really excited to have you on.
Thanks for having me, brother. I'm excited. As you said, we've known each other for a little while now. Like it feels like quite a while anyway. So thanks for having me, man. It's an honor.
Yeah. So I thought we might as well start out with, giving my audience a little bit of a background into your story, and what you do.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I guess I'll start at the start. I entered the health and fitness industry basically the same way everyone else did, right? We have our own transformation. We kind of find fitness and health at one, a particular stage in our life, and we fall in love with it. You know, we fall in love with what it's allowed us to do on a transformative level as individuals. And then, like anyone who has a career in the industry, now you want to give that to people. You want to give people the same experience, the same transformative experience that you've had, and you want to kind of liberate people and almost color their lens with what you can see. And that quickly becomes your passion. I'll go right back to the start before I got into the industry. I played some pretty high level football, and so that's AFL over here in Australia. And, at the age of 14, I had to have a knee reconstruction. So that's pretty early days for somebody, of that, or that's pretty young to have a major surgery like that at that age, which it's a lot of time on the sidelines as well. So I was very passionate about my sport, which you know, during that time, I had nothing else really to do except for to get into the gym. And you know, at the time, you don't realize it, but very quickly when I became lost as an 18-year-old, you know, not knowing what I wanted to do when I was leaving school. I was never really great at school. Don't really enjoy people telling me what to do and making rules for me and telling me what I have to learn. So I never was really that great at school. And then I found myself lost at 18. And it's funny because, you know, the time spent up until then was just in love with sport and fitness, right? So that was almost what I fell into, because I was like, okay, well, what's the one thing I actually enjoy? What's the one thing that feels effortless and that I think I could potentially do for the rest of my life? And so I chose fitness. And although my parents at the time weren't too happy with that, you know, and they weren't not happy with it, but they you know, they obviously wanted me to strive for what we know in this day and age is, you know, the high paying jobs, the jobs that have the perception of success that society paints on them. You know, but again, as I said, nobody really could tell me what to do. You know, that's just the way I've been my whole life. So I did it anyway, right? And I entered the fitness space. I studied exercise science at university and then was also doing my Cert 3 and 4, which is basically my certification to become a personal trainer. And just like school, I didn't like being told what to learn. So uni lasted about a year. And then I kind of left that and at a pretty young age of 19, went out and started my own personal training business, which I had while I was at uni, but then I decided to go all in on that. And that led me to obviously wanting, you know, my journey of self-actualization started to change a little bit. And all of a sudden there was this business element. So my goal was to run a successful business, to set my wife up, to kind of really start taking action on things. Now, the first 2 years weren't like that. The first 2 years I was kind of all over the shop, just really in love with training, was pretty happy that I get to spend my days at the gym. And then after that, you know, there was kind of one day where I was like, okay, well, I was a bit of a party boy back then as well. So, I you know, I just decided to clean my act up and just take life seriously. And that was probably at the age of 20 to 21. Like it was in between that year. So, you know, I went kind of as hard as I could at business. And that was, you know, learning and kind of really honing in on my craft, as a PT and what I wanted to kind of, the legacy I wanted to leave. And that's really what led me into the psychology side, right? Like I really did fall in love with human performance and psychology. And again, it was because, I went through a bit of a transformation then. I'm playing it down a bit, but you know, my life changed dramatically then. Who I was as a person, the things I started to achieve. I seen that really the determining factor in that was my psychology. It was the story I tell myself. So that's what led me to kind of honing in on that. You know, I don't get me wrong. I really started to acquire the skill set in terms of science and get good at that. And what I wanted to help people with is the psychological barriers that people face when trying to transform their body. And I built a really good, a really kind of successful company around that, where, you know, I started off just myself and then I built up to having a team underneath me and kind of underneath the flagship of the brand, which is now Elite Vitality. And what I started to see is that, you know, when I started to build my team, I started to recognize that these guys have the same problems that our clients are having, right? There's such a roller coaster, you know, that is human performance, that is execution of the things that we need to do in order to get the result that we need to have. And I started to see that this is something that is a big problem in business. This is something that a problem that a lot of people face. So I quickly started to switch, and my passion, and this is where my passion started to fall into, you know, really started to dive deep into, you know, psychology. But I also started to realize that this plays such a big role in business. And that as a small business owner, you are always a limiting factor. And that was something that I always told myself. And that's why I always prioritized it. I said, you know, if this is going to be successful, I need to be at my absolute best every single day. I need to make sure that, you know, I can take control of my actions and also take back control when I lose control, right? That's a big thing that I think a lot of people overturn it, or they just jump over it. So, you know, and then that led me to kind of starting a business and changing and pivoting to running a business consultancy company where we basically, you know, deliver education on the foundations of what underpins a successful business. And then we offer a business coach or a consultant to help people apply it. And that's where we're at now as a company. And that's really what I do now is that, and my goal is to almost be the visionary leader of this company and make sure that we're growing our brand and creating a solid brand around that. And, you know, more strategy, bird's eye view of the company at the moment where we're looking at how we grow this company and how do I manage my team to make sure that our brand has the most amount of output possible. And as I said, you know, at the moment, a lot of what I do is in the trenches business, but deep down my love and passion still lies with psychology. I still think it's the most important factor and I still think it's the one that most people struggle with the most. So that's kind of like a backward story of where I from you know today to where I've came from.
Yeah, that's really interesting, man. There's a lot to unpack there, obviously. And you know there's some key points that I want to sort of elaborate on. And one in particular, you sort of mentioned, you know, some of the psychological barriers that people face. And that's not only applies to business, but also just to like the everyday life. So do you want to sort of unpack some of those barriers that, you know, we face on a daily basis?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I started to realize is that and this comes from a lot of study in both in marketing and also psychology is that story is as humans is our sense making device. So what actually happens from a, like there's a term called consciousness that I think it's like almost the precursor to something that we call mindfulness. And mindfulness is this buzzword now that everybody talks around. It's like, you know, anybody who has an Instagram and is in that space is, you know, preaching mindfulness, but I think it gets lost in translation. And the reason is, and what you kind of realize is I read this book called Building a Story Brand, and it's a book by Donald Miller and it's a marketing book. It's talking about building a brand, but what he talks about in that and something that I continuously hear from other experts in the psychology field is that story is our sense-making device. So what we get caught up in our everyday life is we're always perceiving the outside world because that's where all of our threats are. Right. So we're always looking in the outside world. It's called our external consciousness for threats. Because obviously our main role in life is to survive and carry on the species. That's evolutionary. So that's built into us autonomously.
Yeah.
So we're always perceiving the outside world, right? And that's unfortunately what causes a lot of our problems. Because what actually happens is because within our mind, story is our sense-making device, we're always trying to build a story around the things that are happening in the outside world, right? Now, the outside world that we have now obviously you know, as a society, we've progressed a lot. We've got a lot. Our threats have gone from lions and bears and other tribes and you know, from these kind of things to, you know, the person who's commenting on my Instagram feed to the, you know, to the YouTuber, to these things in our life right now, which, you know, you can see how all of a sudden, and think about how many times these things actually hit you on a daily basis. These, you know, these little, dopaminergic, kind of hits, right? Like this is something that happens to us. We get marketed to nearly 90 million times a day or something like that. So it's like, it's understanding that what actually happens within our brain autonomously is that our brain naturally tries to perceive the outside world because that's where all of our threats are. But all of a sudden, our threats have changed over time, right? Now, what we actually do in our head, and this is what our thoughts are. Our thoughts are our brain creating a story about the outside world. So what you see, right, is if we're continuously getting, you know, think about Instagram, think about all these things. And I'm just using Instagram as an example because it really does tie in and it's social media really as a whole is that nobody really posts bad stuff on there. Like nobody gets on there and tells you all the bad things that happened in their day. Most people are telling you the good things that happened in their day. And think about the story that then does. Like, it, you know, naturally we are trying to perceive threats. So it would be great if we could sit there and go, you know, good on Charlene for, you know, hitting her, you know, her PB this week. Good on Roger for, you know, doing what he did this week. But instead, what we do is, because we're trying to perceive threats, is we start to create a story as to, and this is the self, right? This is what we call the self in psychology, is like, you know, we begin to think that we are the center of the universe, right? We're trapped behind our own eyes, and that life is happening to us, and it's not just happening, right? Like, I often say something is like, does my life happen to you, and does your life happen to me? Or do we just exist in this one world? But people don't see the world that way, right? So then guess what? They're trying to perceive threats. Their thoughts are the story that their brain creates in order to create and make sense of the external world. So then we start telling ourselves, when we start to see things like social media and we keep getting bombarded with these things, we start to tell ourselves a story. And that story is, why aren't I doing this? Why isn't this happening to me? Why is this? Why is that? And then we start to, that one little story that we tell ourselves actually fits into this grand picture of our whole life. And we often create a story about our whole life. And it's funny, right? You ask everybody and they've got a hardship story. You know, I went through this when I was a kid. I went through that. And this, you can see how it actually ties in. And I actually think back and you know, I was having a conversation with Ben Pekulski on my podcast, Deepak. And, you know, Ben's a really insightful character, but he said, you know, we had the moment afterwards. It was a really deep conversation, and me and Ben got a good relationship. And he was my mentor for a long time. And, you know, he said to me, he goes, that shit doesn't actually happen. You know, like, we often just tell ourselves this, right? And we build this story. And you know, could you imagine, like, there was a bullshit, like a bullshit filtration device built into humans, that every time they bullshitted, it started to ding, 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 right? It's like, could you imagine how many times that would go off? And I'm just like, this is the thing, right? I'm not saying that I'm immune to this or anything like that. We continuously do this as humans, every single one of us. We tell ourselves a story to either make us feel better, or we keep telling ourselves a story of how our life is. And then really, that's the biggest problem I see, right? Is that, you know, we have to understand the importance of story. Without story, you think about it, it's in every one of our lives. Why do we love movies so much? Right? Why do we love books so much? All of these things, because they're telling us a story. It's what makes sense in our mind. So then, you know, it's really important to understand that that is our sense-making device. And that is that. But the problem is that we've got an internal consciousness, right? We've got an internal consciousness. And you've probably heard the saying, our inner world creates our outer world. Right? Like, people say that if you don't fix your inner world, your outer world is never going to change. And although that is like this, one of those sayings, and it's like, yeah, everybody says it, it's actually the truth, right? And the reason is because if the sense-making device, right, and this is kind of more talking about a term called metacognition. Yep. Now, I look at metacognition, and this is something I learned off Craig Harper, who's he's another fitness dude that's real kind of psychological based. One of the OGs, like, been around for 40 years, but he kind of says that metacognition is story, right? So metacognition talks about, like, think about a brain on top of your brain watching what your brain does. That is story, right? Because that's us creating the story of the actions and everything that's going on without in our life. Now, this is where mindfulness comes in, right? Mindfulness is your ability to remove the self in the present moment and stop listening to that story, right? Because if you're consistently telling yourself this story and it's a negative story, then that causes you, we know this top-down mentality, we tell ourselves a story that creates a thought, right? That thought then becomes an emotion, that emotion then causes a physiological response, and that physiological response is what creates our outside world, right? So unless we have the ability to practice mindfulness, right, and be in the present moment and actually break and stop, what's the right word, to
sort of the pattern,
to cut in and stop, yeah, telling ourselves that story, then we literally lack the abilities to change the things in our outside world. And it's this negative feedback loop where that physiological response then comes back and it causes you to tell yourself a story about that action. That story fits into this grand story that we're telling ourselves. And then it's the same thing, thought, emotion, physiological response, and it just keeps happening over and over again. And Joe Dispenza, right, who's an absolute, he's the OG of meditation, and especially bringing the science to the forefront. But he kind of talks about, you know, most people wake up, they look at their phone, and they go through this same kind of routine every day. And it's that's what mind. If you lack mindfulness, you go through that every single day, and it becomes routine. It becomes repetitive, and then that is where you just, you know, you can't actually change your life. And you know, he actually talks about it. He goes, you know, by the age of 35, a lot of our life is on repeat. You know, like it's from that goes on. Now that doesn't mean that you can't change your life after that, but it just means that, you know, for especially for me, you know, and us, we're very young, right? So for all the people that are young out there, you know, this talks to the fact that you should be really looking after yourself right now and really setting good habits and focusing on reaching your potential. And for those that aren't, that doesn't mean that you can't. It just means that you've got to try extra hard. You've got to put in the work. You've got to be tenacious, right? Tenacity is another thing that comes into this, you know, from a scientific term. It actually, you know, if we actually look at what it means to be the ability to hold on, right? Now, if you lack tenacity, is the same thing. If you can repeat that and create that hardwired circuit within your brain and you know what we call cortical thickening, right? Cortical thickening is when we refire that pattern and that connection gets a lot stronger. That's what we want to create, because when tenacity becomes one of those hardwired circuits, we have the ability to hold on in tough circumstances. Right. So, you know, what we're looking at here is understanding that there's stuff that happens autonomously in our body based on the stories we tell ourselves, which cause physiological responses. Now, I'm a massive fan of meditation for this reason, because meditation is the practice of almost just being in the present moment, right? So, you know, this is why the breathing's important. It's this signal to bring you back to the present moment from being lost in thought. And you can see that thoughts don't actually, you don't have a choice in what you think. It just happens, right? And that's why we find ourselves lost in thought, because we're actually trying to make sense of the world, right? So you can see now, the more time we spend in the present moment, the closer we get to the truth. And the truth is that the world isn't about us. So we need to stop telling ourselves that. And that's when we can start to really, what I believe is start to reach our potential and unlock, you know, this higher level of human performance. In such is that when we start, and again, I like to use meditation. It's not the only way, but it is practice, the practice of mindfulness. It is the practice of breaking that story, bringing myself back to the present moment. And if I actually get better and hardwire that as a skill, then I give myself the ability to change my trajectory at any point in time in my life, whether it's a good time or a bad time, because it's not about always being strong or always being amazing. It's about finding neutrality in everything we do, because that's where we are the most rational. And if we continuously make rational decisions, we get closer to the truth, and that's where we can start to unlock human performance.
Yeah, I think one thing about, you know, encouraging people to practice like meditation and mindfulness and things like that, what do you think is like, why do you think it's so difficult for some people to actually commence such a very simple task? Like, why is it so difficult for some people?
Well, I mean, there's a lack of awareness, right? Like, it's easy for me to say this, but you know, the reason I love it so much is because I understand it. Now, most people, when you talk about meditation, and it is getting better, you know, but we're pretty lucky to have someone named Sam Harris right now who's pioneering some pretty amazing stuff and getting this, you know, in the known world. But it really is because people don't truly understand it. And that's one thing that I say is that anybody who asks me about it, I get a lot of messages about it on Instagram and these kind of things. I send people, like, I've got four podcasts, right? Four podcast episodes that I send to people. Two of them are from Sam Harris's podcast. One is a Joe Dispenza. And the other is, I can't remember who it is. It's a bit of a random one, but the thing that we understand there, right? And the thing that becomes important is that you need to understand it. Otherwise, you're not going to have the tenacity, or you're not going to have the ability to sit through it. Because think about it, right? Most people don't. We've got to look at mindfulness as a skill, right? Mindfulness is the ability to break that. Now, what people don't understand about meditation is it's not about not thinking or sitting there and being perfect. It's about finding neutrality, as I said, in that moment, within that time period, and continuously just bringing yourself back to the present moment. It's the practice of that.
Right.
Think about it. If I sit down for 10 minutes every day and just listen to my mind, will I understand it? Will I start to understand it, right? It's like, you know, nobody understands something from reading one book in one day. You have to continuously study a subject. And it's like, okay, well, if the goal of meditation is to understand my mind because I want to unlock human performance, then I have to sit with it no matter how painful it is, right? Now, the problem is that, think about what we said before. If that story is so negative about ourselves,
right,
then, and I'm sitting down, if my thoughts are my sense-making device and they're the story I tell myself about the world, and I perceive the world in a negative way, then those thoughts, whether, you know, they may not be negative, but majority of them may be, right? And then it's hard for people to sit with those thoughts, right? Because they're actually listening to them. They're indulged, and they're you know, they're like watching a movie of their own life of how bad it is, right? Think about it. It's like, you know, you're sitting there just eating popcorn, indulging, believing, right? It's like you're that person at the cinema who goes, is this a true story? Like, whoa, right? And you're sitting there and eating the popcorn and just letting this thing roll on, and it continuously happens. And then guess what? People, like everything else in the world and what social media does to us, right? It makes us want things quickly. It makes us want things right now. And that's not what meditation is about. Meditation is about experiencing the present moment for what it is, in a thought-free state of neither knowingness, of knowingness, in a thought-free state of knowingness with neither need or want. So the need for things to be amazing in that moment, the need for things to be perfect, actually defeats the purpose of what we're trying to do when we sit down and meditate. But people don't understand that. So then what happens is they sit down, you know, and they find themselves just being lost in thought all the time. And then they're like, oh, well, I'm not doing it right. And then they say, meditation is not for me, right? You know, and that's why it's so hard, because to sit there and listen to thoughts about negativity all the time, you know, it's easy for me to go on my phone and scroll and be dead, right? To be absolutely nothing for the next 2 hours. It's easy for me to sit down on the couch and watch Netflix, yeah, because guess what? That means that my brain's occupied and I don't have to tell myself the negative story anymore. Sure. It's easy for me to listen to music. And this is, you know, I truly think silence is the most beautiful thing in the world. And I think once you find peace in silence, you become an absolute monster, right? And I mean that in a positive way, because when you can find peace in silence, you know, there's a quote, when you find peace in silence, you either become a wild beast or a god. And that's a Stoic quote, but it really does talk about that, you know, most people need to fill their lives with things. And that's why so many people are busy and unhappy, and they're not actually fulfilling what they want in life, is because they're just filling their life. They're just, you know, again, it's easy to fill time. People love being busy, because the more busier I am, the less I actually have to look at myself and analyze and live an examined life.
Yeah. I find that really challenging, like, in today's society, man. Like, I mean, I'm also running a business as well. And so, like, it's hard, because we get so stuck in the momentum of progression, growth, development, but never really taking time to have a break and just, like, sit with ourselves and be like, right, am I really aligning with my values? And, like, am I doing the things that I've always wanted to do? And, yeah, just going back to that and, like, having the chance and space, which I find is difficult myself. I don't know if you find it also tough, because you're always progressing, always wanting to develop.
It's a never-ending battle, man. That's why I don't like talking about meditation in this light, but I often tell myself it's about paying rent. I don't want to achieve goals that have... For me, it's about the person I am. It's about who I want to become as a person. And if my goals are changing that for me, or if I'm sacrificing who I am as a person to achieve some type of status is a zero-sum game, man. It's nobody wins, right? Like, the society doesn't get better the more people that chase status. Look at what social media does to us as a society. It's ruining us, right? And the reason it's ruining us is because people just play the status game. Everybody's worried about being famous and not worried about what it's costing them to get there, and the internal consequence of playing that game. And you know, that's the battle we pay. And again, that's why I say it's paying rent. Every day I meditate, because if I don't, I'm telling myself I don't care about the person I'm becoming. And the other thing I will say about this is that you don't have to surrender your happiness to future times. You don't have to surrender your happiness to these goals. You know, again, the only, this is another Sam Harris thing. And I must say he's influenced my knowledge and you know, everything about me on such a large scale. But all you ever have is the present moment, man. Like, you know, the future never arrives. And the past is a memory. So you only ever have the present moment. And the more time we spend in the past or the future, the less time we actually get to find beauty in what is the present moment. And that's where true fulfillment, joy, and happiness actually occurs. You know, memories and some of our fondest memories are actually when we are at our most present. Right, when we are sitting in front of our partner, and you know, you can think back to the little times where, you know, you just felt like you were floating. And you know, for me, it's, you know, grand finals, right? For me, I love to go to the football, right? Because the football is me in the present moment. That is really one of those times when I go and watch an AFL game, when I am completely present because I love it so much. It is the time that I never think about the bad things going on in my life. I never think about anything like that. And that's a little lesson, right? These are our fondest memories, and they're experienced in the present moment. So the more time we spend in the present moment, the more fulfillment we find in life. And if you actually look at a lot of the things that cause us the most suffering, it is the, you know, the us trying to predict the future, and think, and then that's what causes us to suffer. Or it is literally, you know, memories in the past that of things that weren't great, and trauma that, you know, stick with us for long periods of time that cause us suffering. So, you know, again, it's about paying rent every day on the person you want to be, and never wavering and never compromising on that.
Yeah. You mentioned a little bit about chasing status. And I want to sort of unpack that a little bit, because personally, I had a chat with a friend literally about this exact topic the other day, and it was related to, like, and I'm falling victim to that 100%, chasing status. But if I really look back at why I'm doing that, it's because with status comes power, with power comes influence, and with influence comes like a sense of value. So for me, chasing status equals power, which then gives me influence, which I want to do, you know, I want to spread my message, and which is literally my Instagram and my website. And because I've now got that status, I have the power to, you know, really, I have a voice. I want to be, I'm heard. And so that's really, I think, it makes me wonder whether many great leaders chase that status for that same reason.
Well, the reason is, like, the first thing I want to say is, you know, the end part you said right there is the key, is great leaders, right? So what makes a great leader? And if we actually unpack that, you get a better answer, right? Because great leaders don't chase status. They understand status. They understand it plays a role in their legacy in the world. But, you know, there's a big difference between Nelson Mandela and Gandhi and a lot of these, you know, people that go down in history as great leaders, Winston Churchill, Theodore Roosevelt. And then you think about some of the not so great leaders in the world and some of the ones that we can paint, you know, Trump, he's not a great leader. Like, you know, I mean, I don't know too much about what he does behind the scenes and for the economy and these kind of things. Like, I do a little bit, but we're not going to go into that. But, you know, he, as an actual leader, he's just not great, right? He's not good. He's not a great leader. And you think about, like, the footprint that now is now going to be left in the world. What are people going to say in 20 years' time? And that's really what we're looking at, is that great leaders don't chase status, right? Great leaders chase influence, and they leave their footprint and make the world a better place. So, but there's a big difference, and I think social media makes people want to chase status. Like, I know plenty of people that chase status that that aren't leaving their footprint in the world, or, you know, most people think that it's going to help them in business, and I can tell you that it really doesn't. Like, unless there's a lot to unpack there, but I will say that status is a zero-sum game. People that chase status and make status the goal don't make the world a better place. The world doesn't get better from them achieving it. And the thing with status as well that we got to start to think about is the only way I can actually improve my status is by someone else not. Status is a game where one person always ends up higher than the other. And that is, it's very hard not to compromise ethically on that. Right? Think about it. The more power you get, the greater amount of pressure there is to maintain your status, which means that can you handle that in the present moment? Can you actually make a decision that's aligned with you ethically if it may cost you that status? Maybe someone's attacking you. Maybe someone's threatening to take your spot in the industry, or maybe your spot on that hierarchical ladder. And that's where most people go wrong. And that's why status is a zero-sum game, because what it ends up in is everybody's trying to, kill each other to get to the top. And that doesn't make society a better place, because what it creates is this esoteric untruthfulness to the world, right? Like, think about it. There's a lot of people out there that are living a lie or are kind of, they're doing whatever it takes to get to the top. And as I said, it's a zero-sum game. It leaves a lot of people empty inside and it leaves the world in a worse place. So it doesn't mean that status isn't a great tool. It just means how you use it is probably the most important thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, and one thing to add to that is the interconnectedness between status and ego. So do you want to sort of unpack a little bit about ego and how that can influence,
I mean, like, as I said, I'm going to preempt this, right? Like, I don't have any qualifications in psychology, right? I'm just a lover of it. I think this is all me talking about stuff that I've read, stuff that I've studied and heavily. You know, there was a time where I would study 4 or 5 hours a day on this stuff for a very long time. But the other side of it is that this is me talking out of experience. You know, I love this stuff and I do, none of this is stuff that I haven't tried on myself, and I haven't done any of that. And I think the thing with the ego, right, is the ego becomes your resistance to growth. Like it really is like a shadow, right, that follows you around. And it's this thing that you can never really get rid of. You can only control it. And again, this is mindfulness in action, right? Mindfulness is my ability to drop my ego. Like, you know, when I'm sitting in front of someone and maybe they're wrong, how do I go about it? Do I try to play the status card and know that I could pretty much embarrass them and it would make me look great, or, you know, it would make me, my status of who I am in the hierarchical ladder go up? Or do I go behind the scenes and say, look, that, I don't know if I agree with that. And this is the evidence, but like, I'm only doing this because I think it's going to benefit you. And again, the ego is there as resistance to growth. It's purely there as something to stop you from growing, because it's, how do I explain this? It sits there, and again, I'm talking growth as a person, right? It literally is something that will sit there and it will stop you from growing, because the body doesn't like to, it likes to stay the same. Like, it's, you know, that's what we're wired to do, right? Which, and that's inbuilt into us on many levels, right? So it's, you know, it's understanding that the reason that the ego is so aligned with status is because we, again, and this can come back to the story that we tell ourselves. Like a lot of the time it can come back to this, where it's like the story we tell ourselves, right, dictates our actions in every moment. And a lot of the time that story can be the ego, right, protecting us. It is a survival mechanism. Mm-hmm. The ego, that's what it's there for. And that's why in some instances it's actually great to have an ego. It's great for that ego to come out and to be in full flight, because it will protect you. But a lot of the time it's not needed. And a lot of the time it can come at the cost of others. And that's why, honestly, like, that's what it is. It is a survival mechanism. The ego is there to protect you, but a lot of the time we don't need protecting. You know, we live in a pretty good world. We live in a world full of abundance, and what we see is now that the ego is programmed, and we have, there's many different factors that affect it, and it has, there's a lot more that it has to filter. And a lot of the time, what I think is it just gets it wrong. It gets it, you know, it comes out when it doesn't need to be there. And again, if we have the inability to practice mindfulness, then we have the inability to control the ego. And that's where it ties in with status, because we think that status comes with success. And a lot of people just try to achieve status for the fact that they want to be famous, for the fact that it makes them feel good, right? But the problem is that when it comes at the cost of others, eventually it leaves us feeling empty inside.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Well, I mean, no matter how hard you try to grow, you're always going to leave. It's always going to come at the expense of others, though. Like, that's part of the growth. That's part of, like, it's a sacrifice, right? Like, and that's another thing that you've spoken about a lot in the past is sacrifice. And you know, how do we consider something too far? We're sacrificing things way too far.
That's a really tough question. I want to go back. I honestly don't think that growth always comes at the cost of someone else. Like, I really don't. Like, I think as more time goes by, I think a lot of the time, sometimes it status wise, it does. Like, you know, if you, it's for status gains, but if we got to really unpack what growth is. Like, growth isn't money. Growth isn't status. Like, growth isn't any of these things. Like, you can have a lot of money and still be, growth is fulfillment. Growth is self-actualization, right? Growth is me reaching my potential. And what that potential is dynamic and different to everyone. So I think dependent upon what that goal is, whatever self-actualization is to the individual is how that's created, if that makes sense. So it's like, you know, my goal isn't to, if I want to be the richest man in the world, then yeah, it might have to come at the cost of others, but that's not my measuring stick. My measuring stick for me is the person I am. It's how I treat my family. It's how I treat, you know, what do people say to me? What do people say about me at my funeral? And that's a question that I got asked by one of my mentors, and it was really powerful, but it's like, what do people say about you at your funeral? What are the stories that everybody says and tells? And that is the measuring stick for me. It's like, you know, how I treat people and what people say about me really, really means something to me. And it's because, you know, the measuring stick for me is that it's how I treat people. It's the legacy I leave. It's what, you know, and that's my own self-actualization. That's why I feel unease, right? I feel unease when I feel that my want for status and money outruns my need to be a great person, to leave a legacy, to leave the world in a better place. Because that's, and again, this is what we understand, right? Is that when we know that we're not living aligned, that is when the ego will actually come and protect us, right? That's when we start, you know, because again, a lot of the time when we're not living aligned to who we want to be, right? And the story, you know, and the story we tell ourselves about who we want to be, then we bottle up this emotion, right? And this can come from trauma. This can come from anything. This is literally, we are wired this way, right? But we bottle up emotion, right? And then we bottle up emotion so much that the only way I can release the gasket, the only way I can release the pressure valve is by pushing this out to the world, right? And that's why that's where the ego exists, right? Because when I feel threatened, that's when the ego comes in. It starts to protect me, and it protects me. And, you know, a lot of the time it protects me by putting others down, by feeling the need to hurt somebody, both either physically or emotionally, to protect myself, right? Because that's how it's been done for years, right? Like that's the evolution of what we do, right? So I think understanding that and understanding that, And again, spending more time with yourself and understanding yourself is the absolute key here, is that because you learn to deal with things, you know, you no longer do these emotions bottle up inside and then we just have to blurt it out to the world. And you know, we all know somebody that continuously complains, right? And every time you come to them, they tell you every single problem they're having in life, yeah. Right? think that is what we're talking about there. That's someone who has the inability to deal with these emotions that are internal. They're happening in their internal consciousness. So the only way that they can get this release of pressure internally is to actually project it out to the world. And then again, that's how our inner world starts to create our outer world. Unless I'm dealing with things internally, then I really have no choice in how I live my life. And the same things will keep on happening to me over and over and over again. I hope that answered your question. I think I got a little bit lost up there, but.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, like that last point that you said about, people that complain, the reason why they do that may just well be because they want to feel heard. They want to feel understood. And that's them trying to make sense of their world as well. Like that could be their.
Or they're trying to rationalize their world. Right, like that's the other thing. That's the other thing that happens. It's the ego trying to protect us, right? So, because again, in order for me to deal with my internal world and actually start to change my external world, that means I have to take responsibility for everything that happens to me, right? Now, most people give their power out to the outside world, and when you give that, you become powerless. You lack the ability to change anything. So, the hardest thing for somebody to do is to admit that they're wrong. I guarantee you. The hardest thing for anybody to do in life is to admit that they're wrong, because the ego protects you from that.
So
right? The ego is the thing that actually protects you from that.
So then it makes me wonder whether, some of the best leaders in the world, do you think that they've, like, have they admitted that they're wrong, like, along the way?
I think you're asking the wrong question. I think you got to go a step further and say, what's the story they're telling themselves? Because somebody can have a massive ego, but then the story they're telling themselves is of what actually gets them through and allows them to become, again, this is where the thing of great leader comes in. Like, we're talking, there's great leaders out there that are horrible people, right? Or what might people say, what is a great leader? Like, to me, a great leader is someone who's compassionate. It's someone who's empathetic. It's someone who is selfless. It's somebody who is tenacious. It's somebody who, really tries to make the world a better place, no matter what. It's someone who's bold, brave, right? But, then we can look at some people that are in really high places of power that aren't those things. And again, the story I tell myself is what might the great leader is to me, but what a great leader is to somebody else is different. So it's important to understand that, it's important to understand that, again, we all have dynamic situations. I'm wired a certain way because of the experiences I've been through. So are you. So that means what you perceive as a great leader and what I perceive as a great leader is totally different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's really important to understand, because we're talking about great leaders, and we're not actually paying attention to the fact that that's different for everybody. And again, I think the thing you're saying is like, how do some of these people end up in these positions? Right? Like, how to, because again, it's that, because there are people out there that have massive egos. And honestly, a lot of the most powerful people in the world have that ego because they rationalize everything they do. And that's the story they tell themselves.
So therefore, do you think that they, like, along their way, they would have been wrong many, many times. So it makes me wonder whether they've just brushed it aside and been like, no, I'm
100%.
Wrong. I've been right.
100%.
Never admitted.
Because it's easier for them to rationalize the situation and the ego come in and protect them, and then they build a story about that, and then that's what gives them the energy. That's their physiological response is still, it's still very much moving in the direction they want it to, because they just keep rationalizing and telling themselves the same story. Now, I think true liberation is when that you can admit that you're wrong and that you can actually deal with consequences internally, right? That's, for me, what is the most liberating feeling in the world. Now, again, the goal is probably different for me to them. Like, my goal is to become a great human. Their goal is probably to have a lot of money, right? Now, is one right or wrong? It's probably not my place to say, man. Like, I'm not going to come out and say, yeah, like, fuck money and all of this kind of stuff. Like, it's not, like, again, I've spent enough time understanding that my opinion isn't just the one and the only one that matters. And it's definitely not right or wrong. It's just mine. And again, what we got to understand is tribe, like, if we look at tribes, you know, there's going to be people that listen to this and say, I really love what that guy has to say. There's going to be people that go, yeah, probably wasn't in my hood. It probably wasn't something that I really kind of connect with. That's totally fine. And that's the game the whole world's playing. Some people love Arnold Schwarzenegger. Some people love Jeff Bezos. Some people love Michael Jordan, right? Now, the people that like them are wired a certain way based on their experiences, and they look up to these people because the story they tell themselves, right? You see how powerful this is. And then that's how we create followings and these kind of things. Like, you know, is somebody, put it this way, do you reckon somebody from acting school is going to come into, you know, your podcast and really enjoy it?
No chance.
No chance. You're not going to be their tribal leader, right? Yeah. So it's understanding that, you know, this is a really dynamic kind of situation. And look, in my opinion and from my point of view, the ability to deal with your internal problems is, again, the most powerful tool in the world because, it takes you closer to the truth. And when you get closer to the truth, your decision-making and judgment gets better. So the problem is that we also see is with a lot of these tribal leaders, right, they know how to play the game, right? Like, you know, they might be dealing with these internal problems, but then, you know, they just play in the game with obviously creating a facade that allows them to keep living the life they want. And that's, look, there's nothing wrong with that either. Like, we're never going to know, right? Truly. We might find out in a few cases, but we're never going to know. So again, I still think whether, you know, there's going to be a lot of people out there that, and a lot of these leaders and a lot of people there, but I really think that the most liberating thing you can do is learn how to deal with things internally and take responsibility for everything. Because that's the only time that you can ever start to change anything.
It's a shame that we're not taught this in school. Like, you know, back in high school, a lot of guys that I went to school with, like, if I brought this up with them now, mate, they don't want to know about it at all. That you even bring up the fact that you need to work through things and like stop bottling up emotions. Why it's so difficult it's very difficult for a lot of guys.
100% it is, right? It's the hardest thing in the world, you know, like, cause again, you have to admit that you're wrong. You have to, you know, that's hard to do. Like, it's really hard to sit there and go, you are not a good person. You know, you are not who you want to be. You are not this, you are not that. It's very hard for you to do that because it's autonomous. A lot of this stuff is autonomous. It's and we don't understand that it's happening. And then for me to go back on this and actually say to myself, well, you are wrong. This is not who you want to be. This is not the person you want to be. It's extremely hard to do because it can make you feel anxious. It can make you feel all these things. But it is only then that you can actually start to change your trajectory is when you take responsibility for it.
Yeah. And when you're being like very self-critical,
it's very hard. Like, I look back at the person I was when I was 19 and I'm just like, you know, you were an absolute asshole. Like, and I look back at, you know, I often see people from my school, right? And I was almost like a jock. Like, I was like a guy, which, you know, a lot of people look now and they're like, I can't believe you were like that. Like, cause I'm a very different person, but you know, I was not a great person back then. Like, I was mean to a lot of people, like during high school and these kind of things. But the only reason I was like that is because of the things that I had been through in my life. So it's not about blaming myself. It's not about turning around and pointing the finger. It's about saying, I don't want to do that anymore. And I want to start to change things. And I've got to take responsibility for the fact that the reason I was like that isn't anybody else's fault. It's mine. It's my responsibility. My life is my responsibility, right? And the only way I can start to change things and truly start to change things is by taking responsibility and dealing with the internal and doing the internal work.
Yeah, it's extreme ownership, man. Like, that's what it's about. And it's difficult. It is very difficult. But hats off to you, man, for making for pivoting back then, because it would have been very difficult, like very, very difficult to, you know, come out of that.
It was extremely hard. Like, I, you know, I can still kind of pinpoint a few conversations with, you know, I was lucky to have some pretty amazing people in my life and probably owe a lot to them. Definitely owe a lot to them. But, you know, it's difficult for anyone to do this, but it's, again, it is the igniter in a sense of change, right? It is what allows you to start making change only when you are willing to take responsibility for everything and quickly, right? The world doesn't belong to the biggest. The world belongs to the fastest. The quicker you can adapt to change, that is literally what survival of the fittest is. But this is as a person as well. The quicker you can get a grasp on things internally, the quicker things start to change in externally. And that's really the message, is that the better you get at honing in and developing these skills that allow you to work, do the internal work, the quicker your life starts to change externally. And that's when you gain momentum and start to grow. But it is really something where you got to pay rent every day. You know, it's something that you have to wake up and want to be a better person, want to do the internal work every single day. Otherwise, you know, you're just letting go, right? And you start to see that you're allowing and you're giving power back to the world, and instead of having it within you, and that's when you obviously can stagnate and go backwards.
It's really powerful, man. Thanks for sharing that. And you know, and respect to you for even sharing that, because that's obviously for a lot of people that can be very difficult. So,
it's a part of it, right? Like, you know, you got to share this stuff. You got to be open. You know, I took responsibility for it, and I still do. And it's actually something that helps me now. You know, the fact that I know what I don't want to be is a big kind of help to me understanding who I want to be. And that's, again, it's about being open. It's about admitting that I'm wrong and I'm not always right, and admitting that sometimes I do things wrong, and I still sometimes do things wrong. I still sometimes don't live in alignment, and it's about recognizing that. And again, I want to draw this back because it's a really important point, but I want to draw this back to meditation. The win in meditation isn't not being lost in thought. The win in meditation is recognizing that you're lost in thought. The win in life is not being a bad person or not living aligned to your values. The win in life is recognizing when you are, right? It's recognizing when, hey, maybe I'm not doing what I want to do. Maybe I'm not living aligned. Maybe I'm not, you know, working towards that vision. Maybe I'm not giving myself the best opportunity. That's the win. It's the it's the ability to recognize, because when I recognize, I take responsibility, and that's when I can change it. So I'm open about when I'm wrong. When I have a fight with my partner, it finishes in a second, right? Because I go, okay, I'm wrong, right? When I sit there in front of someone and, when I'm consulting with a company and, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I was wrong on that. Maybe it wasn't the best move. Maybe, you know, it was something like that. You know, I'm open about it because it gives me the power. As long as I'm open about it and I take responsibility for it, I still hold the power. And that means nobody can take that from me, right? And that is the key here, is that, you know, again, you start to give your power to the outside world when you lack the ability to take responsibility.
I love it, man. It's it's powerful. It's really powerful. So we're getting close to the end. There's a few other. Is there any other sort of topics you want to like expand on? Any other things that you've learned in particular? Maybe recently, things that you've learned in the last couple of months or so.
Oh man, there's a heap, right? Like I think, probably more in the business space. Like I've learned a heap over the last. That's where my focus has been the last, I would say, 4 to 6 months. Obviously, with COVID and you know what it's wreaking havoc at the moment. So. A lot of what we do, but I think, you know, this stuff becomes just more important right now more than ever. Spending more time at home, you're spending more time with your loved ones. We're obviously, you know, things aren't going as planned. The story we're telling ourselves, you know, plays a big role in our actions. And now more than ever, it's really important that a lot of people start to place emphasis and pay attention to this stuff, because you know what you do now is almost going to have tenfold or the impact in the world, because everything is so, the world's level of consciousness, in a sense, like I don't want to, like that might lose a few people, but you know, the world's energy is taking
vibration.
A beating at the moment. It's taking a beating. So you know, your ability to take responsibility for your own actions and admit that you're, you know, admit when you're not living aligned and be a great person is going to affect. And so, you know, how you act right now affects people tenfold, right? So if you're with your family and you're an asshole, you know, that's going to affect them, and that's going to have a larger effect than what it previously did. And it's the same with the other way. If you position yourself as somebody who cares and somebody who's willing to help and listen and be empathetic and you place yourself that's going to, you know, have a dramatic impact on the people you care about and the people that you're around as well. And, you know, that is understanding that changes people's lives. You know, this stuff, we don't place emphasis on it, but our actions every day play a pivotal role in someone else's journey. And, you know, the stuff that I say on here, the stuff that I say to my partner, the stuff that I say to my clients, every little thing that I do, every little word that I say makes an impact, and it wires someone. The brain is plastic, which means that people take things in. You could be mean to someone. It could be the slightest little thing, but it could have such a big effect, and especially right now. And we're seeing, you know, the stats are going to come out eventually on a lot of topics, you know, in the world. But, you know, dare I say that there's been no more important times than right now to be a great person and to be empathetic, to be compassionate. It's just extremely important right now that everybody does their best and everybody takes responsibility when they're not at their best, because that's what makes the world a better place. If status makes it worse, then internal work makes it better, and that's what we should be focusing on.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Do the inner work, everyone. Do the inner work, because that's where, you know, that's where it all starts. And then from that, we can influence the outer world, which is what you just literally demonstrated. So, thanks for joining me in today, Kyle. It's been a really deep chat, and I always knew it was going to be that, because it's no other way with Kyle.
literally, we've had a few.
Yeah. So, if my listeners want to learn more about you, your content, your business as well, where can they find out more about you?
Yeah, I got a personal Instagram page that I'm making a little bit more effort now with. It's Kyle R. Trainor, and our company's Instagram as well is Elite Vitality Mastery. So you can go and check out those. Everything's on there. We've got a podcast as well, very business focused, and a little bit of psychology as well. As I said, we're getting a little bit more busy on there. So we're trying to put out a lot more content. And the other thing as well, I'm very open. If somebody wants to chat, if anybody wants to shoot me a message or has any questions, then they can feel free to do so, because as I said, I'm a bit of an open book when it comes to all this stuff.
Beautiful. So for those listening in, I'll be linking everything Kyle just mentioned in the show notes. But that pretty much wraps up today. So yeah, thanks for coming on board, Kyle. And I look forward to the next episode.
Thanks for having me, man.
No worries.
Thank you, everyone, for joining in to today's episode. For in-depth show notes and lessons learned, visit nofilter.media/boostyourbiology.
This has been a No Filter Media production.
Say what you want.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.